So, my dear, the day you have always dreamed of has arrived. The day you become Bride of Chaotica!
My name's Taylor, a bona fide Trekkie, although I might meet my matches today. And here is Elizabeth.
And I'm Elizabeth. And I really know nothing about Star Trek except for the little that Taylor has taught me. And I know nothing about Star Trek Discovery. So I'm excited to hear whatever knowledge can be shared with me today.
Join us as we go through this panel today, where we're mostly going to be focusing on the impact that Discovery has had on us as fans, as we slowly try to indoctrinate Elizabeth into watching Discovery. That is the goal. The way I want to do this is, if you looked at the outline that I sent before this, we are going to be convincing Elizabeth at the very end to watch Discovery. We're going to have little closing statements where we're like, this is why you should watch it. But to kick things off, Brides of Chaotica was born out of the idea that I had no Trek fan friends whatsoever. I kind of started watching it in a void. And then Elizabeth is just a really smart person. And I was like, I want you to watch this with me. Why not record? Of course. Well, let's record our little journey of getting her to watch Star Trek with me. I didn't start watching Star Trek until 2020, so I'm a fairly new Trekkie, although I jumped in really hard, really fast.
Very, very intense, very quick.
And very intense. I've gone to Vegas conventions. There's a New York convention I'm going to later. Like, I jumped in real fast.
Yeah. And I think the podcast also was born out of, like, Taylor and I are on different coasts right now, and we're best friends from college, and we don't see each other nearly enough. So this is kind of also meant as, like, let's do this thing together and involve, you know, what so far has been a really wonderful community. I mean, Taylor's, again, much more engaged with the Trek community than I am, but really wonderful people all around, the people we've met so far and heard from. So we're really excited to, like, meet you guys and learn more about why you love Star Trek, and specifically Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through our little intros. I started watching Trek in 2020, and before that had, like, no knowledge of it other than what I saw on, like, Big Bang Theory and my nerdy uncle that watched Star Trek that my mom always made fun of. So coming into the Star Trek community was kind of shocking for me, because I didn't expect to love it as much as I did, but then we were all trapped inside for so long. So it just happened. Elizabeth, really quickly, go over your Trek knowledge prior to me.
So my Trek knowledge before Taylor basically consisted of me having seen the few movies that they did with Chris Pine in them. So, like, very limited, more like mass knowledge, I guess, for a lot of people. I think a lot of people saw those movies that weren't necessarily in the Trek community initially. And I hate to say it, but that's kind of like where it ended. Besides just kind of like hearing general references to, like Vulcans and like the, you know, I can do that, but that's about it. Let's see what else. I did know about Data prior to doing this podcast.
You did?
Yeah, I knew about Data, like, vaguely. I did not know that. Oh, yeah, no. I knew that he was, like, this lovely, like, golden kind of, like, I don't want to say a robot man. He's like a cyber intelligent. He's wonderful. We love Data. Data. If you've listened to the podcast, or if not, I'm letting you know, I have a very I don't think unhealthy is a good way to put it, but I love Data. I'm a little bit obsessed with him.
It's a little unhealthy, Elizabeth.
It might be a little unhealthy. But anyways, so I did know about Data, but I didn't know nearly as much as I do now about him. And then I knew kind of like general character names, like, you know, like I had heard of, I mean, like obviously Spock. I think a lot of people know Spock, and like I had heard of Pike, but, you know, not really beyond that. Let's see. Yeah. And then since doing the podcast, I've learned about Ferengi and let's see, you know, I knew that Taylor did love Dr. Beverly Crusher.
I do.
And
a lot.
And Janeway. I did know about that. I was very aware of Taylor's love for those two characters. But I hadn't experienced them kind of within the context of their stories. And so, yeah, I'm just still learning. I'm still very new. So that's about it. So, okay, go ahead, Jordan.
Thank you. Yeah, my name's Jordan. I use she, her pronouns as well. I go by Jordan LaForden on most of my social medias, kind of as a play on Jordy LaForge. My dad called me Jordy or George, or there's lots of nicknames, but Jordy was my nickname when I was really little. And so I don't really remember a time when I didn't know what Star Trek was, thanks to my dad and then my older brother, mostly my older brother. He was a big Trekkie. He's kind of moved on since then, since probably college. My first Trek that I remember was Voyager. I was probably too young to be staying up that late to watch it, but my brother is 7 years older than me, and we would stay up late and we would watch Voyager and Buffy back to back. And I would like desperately try to stay awake. I was probably like six at the time, six or seven. Desperately try to stay up late past my bedtime with him, and I would always fall asleep during the episode, and then he'd have to tell me like, oh, this is how they got out of whatever shenanigans they'd gotten into before I fell asleep. And so that was my first like memory of Star Trek, other than like I knew who Spock was, I knew who Captain Picard was because my dad would have reruns on, but my first like when I first felt like a Trekkie was when Enterprise aired. I was 11 when it first aired. And it was, I felt like I was watching it, not like I was watching it with my brother. And so that's when, like, I still remember, because I mean, I was watching it with my brother, but I was watching it on my own too. And so I remember when Broken Bow first aired, and, you know, the Enterprise theme song comes on, and I loved it. My brother, who was 18, did not love it. He was like, what are they doing to my Star Trek? And I was like, fine, if you don't like this, then this can be, if you don't like it, then this can be my Trek, and you can have other Trek. And so my first memory is Voyager. I feel like Enterprise made me a Trekkie, but I've been on board since the womb, basically. I feel like with my dad and my brother, I didn't have an option. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've kind of rediscovered my love for Trek, because it kind of ebbs and flows, right? Like there are seasons of your life when part of it is like undergrad, I didn't have any time to watch it. And then I got back into the Kelvin movies, I got back into it. Zachary Quinto, I blame him for it because I have a big old crush on that man. So they're just all hot at this point, which is fine with me. I watch for the plot only, I promise. But that's fine. I got back into it with the Kelvin movies and then like kind of went away. And then I went to grad school. Didn't have any – I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but I didn't watch Discovery when it first came out because I was in grad school. But then after finishing my degree, was able to – get back.
I love it. So now let's hear from.
So my pronouns are they and them. I have seen every Star Trek movie and TV show since starting in late 2022. Before that, I had Like, I'd seen the Kelvin movies, but it was like, oh, our friends have this on DVD. Let's just put it on while we're at their house kind of thing. Like, I was not watching it. And I'd seen some of Next Generation and not Deep Space Nine, Voyager. I'm pretty sure I only watched Next Generation because I was in love with Jonathan Frakes from Beyond Belief when I was a teenager. But I never really got into it until I live at a group home, and when the new season of Picard was coming out, one of the staff members here was like, there's new shows coming out and no one wants to watch them with me. I said, well, which ones are they? He's like, Picard. Well, I'll get caught up in the last two seasons and watch it with you. And I realized I have no idea what's going on. I don't know who Picard is. What is this show? So I'd watch like all of Next Generation again. And then somehow that has led into watching every Star Trek. And actually it's been like over the course of about a year, I watched it all. And it was really just like an intense, like, I'm going to jump into this fandom immediately kind of thing.
Wow. Yeah. That's like, it seems like this tends to be the kind of the story, I feel like, among a lot of Trek fans. It's like, you're introduced to it a little bit, and then all of a sudden, you're just suddenly super, super deep in it.
Yeah.
Which I love. I think that's awesome. Yeah. So, for those that haven't listened to the podcast yet, or for you guys, if you haven't, which again, totally fine. Taylor basically picks random episodes from different series for me to watch. So my knowledge is very scattered and varied. And I'm still at that stage where I'm trying to keep all of the people kind of which shows they're on. I'm still trying to kind of file that and do an organizational mental filing system. I think I approach it kind of from more of like an intellectual point of view, mostly just because, you know, I don't know if it's the form of the podcast that we do, like there's kind of like a methodical approach to it. And so I like to focus on kind of like the themes and stuff, but I am finding myself being like specifically compelled by certain characters more and more. I mean, Data has been an unhealthy obsession from the beginning and continues to be an unhealthy obsession. And I will always love Data, but I'm starting to like, I love Geordi LaForge. I love his character. I mean, obviously I can't not love Janeway and Crusher because Taylor loves Janeway and Crusher, but yeah. It's just kind of one of those things where it's slowly developed. I still don't know if I would classify myself as a Trekkie. I would say I'm like a fan of Trek, which I don't know if there's that big of a difference, but, I'm slowly getting there. I'm in law school. And so it's kind of also like a limited time thing. So I haven't got to the point where I'm watching it like in my free time quite. I'm still very much in that, like, but I like the, and we've talked a little bit about this on the podcast, like, I really love kind of the structure that, and the approach that Trek has to really analyzing like societal issues and kind of putting them, like we've talked about, like in an arm's length, so that they're a little more approachable and a little less, like it just makes them a little more, like it allows you to see things more in a more objective way. And I love that. I love that it has like broader societal implications, and it really makes you think. And I think it's wonderful for that. And I do appreciate it. I especially appreciate that part, but the characters are wonderful.
When do you remember first hearing about Discovery? And whoever wants to jump off with that, Jordan or Jen, feel free. Just when was the first time that you heard about it?
For me, it was when I was watching Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. I was live tweeting about it, and everyone was like, oh, are you going to watch the new shows? I said, I don't know what new shows you're talking about, like, other than Picard. Like, I am new to this. So I think it was, like, my third show I watched. Might have been the fourth. I think I watched Enterprise first. But it was about this time last year, I got into it and I watched it so fast. I think I was watching like a season a week. This was my first experience watching a Star Trek series that wasn't finished yet. So no one knows what happens next. And so no one can spoil like everything for me. And that was an interesting experience for me. I think I watched the old shows first, like the originals. And then I wanted to go into Strange New Worlds because I heard like, oh, Pike and Spock and Uhura. And everyone's like, no, you have to watch Discovery first. And at first I was a little bit like reluctant, like, well, I don't really want to, I want to just go to Strange New Worlds. And then Gabriel Lorca was in Discovery and I fell in love with him. And then I just kept watching it, even though he broke my heart.
Yeah, I heard of it when it first came out. I remember seeing all the, you know, all the ads and commercials for this new Star Trek show on this new streaming service, which I was like, I don't want to have to pay for Star Trek. That's the only reason I had Netflix, and it wasn't going to be on Netflix. And so, and I didn't have like cable or anything where I could watch, because I think they aired the first season or part of the first season like on CBS, I think. But I didn't have that either. And so I was like, well, eventually I'll get to it if they put it on Netflix or whatever. But then I started grad school. I feel like there's a theme here. Like I started grad school and I was like, I just don't have the, don't have the capacity for it. Mm-hmm. And then, so I like knew what it was. I didn't really read reviews or anything of it. But then in January of 2020, decided to finally break down and get CBS All Access so I could watch Picard season one because I was so excited about it. But being in grad school, I think I was watching like one episode a month. Like I just like, it took me forever. Finally,
I can relate to that.
Yeah. That's like all I had time for. Cause I was also like working and stuff. And so I don't remember. I finished all of Picard season one. And then I think I was like, okay, like maybe I'll start watching Discovery now. Since I have this and just see what it's all about. I started watching it during like, I tried to watch two or three episodes a week when I was on the treadmill, and oh, it was so dark and I couldn't see anything. And there was so much Klingon, and I'm trying to like read while I'm on the treadmill. And I'm like, I'm really prone to motion sickness anyway. So I was like, this is not working. So I think I got through the first five episodes, and I was like, I'm curious where this is going. I just don't. Yeah. So finally got through with grad school and I was like, I'm going to give this a shot, like an actual not on the treadmill shot. So I can actually pay attention to what's going on. And I'll never forget like which episode it was. It was the episode CV Patch and Parabellum where like Ash Tyler, who I'm in love with, Jen is in love with Gabriel Lorca. Ash Tyler is my guy. he and Michael and Saru are all on that planet together. I don't know if you've seen that episode yet. But I was like, this is phenomenal. Like, where have I been? And then the next episode was the one where with Mud and like the time travel, or not time travel, but like the time crystal stuff. And I was hooked, and I was just like off to the races. But timeline wise, season five is going to be the first season that I'm watching of Discovery while it comes out. I didn't make it to, I finished season four, like maybe 2 months after, like a month after it ended. Like I almost got caught up, but not quite. And so season five is the first one I'm going to be experiencing real time. And I'm like, I have to wait between episodes? Like that is the rudest thing I've ever heard. I can't do that. I've never had to do that before, but I'll survive, I guess.
That's honestly, that's such a bummer. Like that is the one thing that is, I mean, I'm sure Star Trek fans, this is probably a unique experience since I feel like the majority of the shows are, you know, have been out and you know, been out for a while and available for a while. But I just in other shows too, I can relate to that. You're like, I've been recently, not to get off track too much, I just recently started watching Abbott Elementary. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It's won a bunch of Emmys. And we, you know, my husband and I kind of binge watched the first couple show, first couple seasons, I think. And we finally have gotten caught up to season 3, which I think is the current season. And now we're like waiting week by week for new episodes. And yeah, it is. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're experiencing.
We got used to that, being able to just watch. Yeah. I guess. Okay. So you guys mentioned a couple different characters that I have no reference for. So I don't know. I guess you could maybe reference a couple of those characters, but I don't know. Maybe talk about like a favorite character so far or a favorite character you have. Yeah. And just tell me about why you like that character. So either of you guys can go ahead and go with that.
Well, Jen, I'm so interested in your love for Gabriel Lorca. Like I would love to hear more about that personally.
Well, I think that the way the show did it with like it is all one story connecting all the episodes. Everyone has better story arcs than they had in the other shows, but just the fact that they can have this like really charismatic, handsome captain, you're like, oh, look at him, isn't he awesome? And then you're slowly like, oh, I don't trust him. Still kind of like him. Do not trust him. And then somehow get you to cheer for his death. Even though like earlier, like several episodes ago, I was like, I love him. And I was like, yeah, take that. Like, just the fact that Discovery can turn your emotions so quickly over the course of just like, he wasn't even in the first two episodes. So like, 6 or 7 episodes, they take you through this whole journey, and I just think that's amazing that they can do that.
So this character, tell me a little bit about him and how many seasons is he in? What's his kind of background? Because like I know nothing, so I'd love to hear more.
Do you want like the big twist spoiled?
I mean, I guess you can if you want. You mentioned that he's a captain. Is that what you said?
Yeah. He's the captain of Discovery in the first season.
Okay. And
he is not to be trusted. I won't tell you the exact twist.
Okay.
But you slowly learn like he's got other motives, and then about half of the season you realize like, oh, he's got a lot of other motives. He is like really manipulating stuff around here.
Oh no. And,
yeah. But he still is like trying to be a good captain while not being a good guy.
Kind of like a gray area character.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I think that takes so much more. I don't know. I love characters like that because it is so hard because like, it seems like you have kind of this conflict you've mentioned, like, yeah, you like this guy and you're rooting for him, but you're also kind of like, oh, that's sketchy. Like,
Until you find out exactly what he's up to, he's definitely like morally gray. And then it's like, not gray anymore. But, Jason Isaacs plays him.
Oh, Jason Isaac?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, love him. Love his work. That's awesome. Very interesting. Yeah. Okay. I'm intrigued. And then Jordan, you mentioned kind of like a slew of characters there.
Yeah. So Jen, it's funny that a lot of what you were saying about Lorca resonated with me, with my love for Ash Tyler, of like totally fell head over heels for him right away. Like I have kind of a tall, dark and handsome thing. And I love brooding characters, like tall, dark, and handsome with some trauma in their past is maybe like my type, which is, it's been that way my whole life. I'm just gonna be honest. So that's not my husband at all, which is really funny. So yeah, I fell head over heels for him right away. And then there's also a big twist that I felt like the rug got pulled out from under me. It kind of got pulled out from under like everyone in the show, and I was like right there with them. But there is a little bit of redemption for him. I don't want to spoil anything because it's so good. There's some redemption for I also have, as someone who, I mean, I love Jonathan Riker growing up too. I'm like, okay, I have a thing for beards as well. So bearded Ash Tyler specifically, and like long hair bearded Ash Tyler is, yeah. He is probably, he's not my favorite character in Discovery, but he's like one of them.
He's like a top, like yeah. He's in that.
He's my Discovery. Like I call him like the love of my life. Which is not, that's me just being dramatic, but like, yeah, like he's,
no, we get attached. I mean,
oh yeah.
The characters. Yeah. You get attached.
Yeah. I
have so many like Star Trek husbands and wives.
Oh
like,
that's just... yeah. Well, yeah, I would, yeah. Ash Tyler would never be my Star Trek husband because like he is problematic. But he could be my, like, I made a bad decision boyfriend. Like that's fine. So, yeah, I also really love Arium. Arium is one of my favorites. I think if you like Data, you might like Arium.
Okay.
She's cybernetically augmented, she prefers to say it.
Cybernetically augmented. Yes. I love that.
She's a tragic backstory, which again gets me every time. Though I think most characters in Discovery have a tragic backstory.
That's what I've noticed.
Yeah. I like Tilly, I love feelings. So like, yeah, that's one reason I love Discovery is like there's big emotions and they are very relatable. Like they're like life has big emotions. And so like, that's what I want to see on screen to a certain extent. So yeah, I love Arium. Love Michael Burnham. Once we get like
season, we'll get season into four. Michael Burnham, don't okay. you worry.
Okay. Yeah, I love Michael
it's Burnham. It's a whole bullet point on the outline.
Yeah. I love Dr. Culber, which makes my love for Ash Tyler complicated even more if you've seen more of season one. There's some complications to that love, but I do love Dr. Culber. I love Stamets too. I feel like he and Geordi are like opposite sides of the same coin. So that makes sense to me. But if you let me talk long enough, I'll list every character of Discovery. So I'm gonna stop now.
Stop it off. No, like Elizabeth, like you're gonna love it because it is a stacked cast. Mm-hmm. I'm an actor. So when I watch Star Trek, it's very much from an actor's point of view. And there is not an actor that gets cast in Star Trek that isn't a phenomenal, like, artist. So let's just start there with why we're probably going to do a series on just Discovery.
Yeah, we probably will. As we should.
As we should.
I'm already compelled. I'm very compelled. I don't know. Maybe I'm like too easily convinced of things, but like I'm already interested, honestly.
No, you're not.
No, I am though. I'm like,
you're a lawyer. You're like a law student. You're not.
I know, but okay, maybe it's that it's Jason Isaacs. Maybe Jason Isaacs is enough to get me there.
That's all you needed.
I mean, I get it. Janeway's my wife, so I'll watch anything with.
Like, honestly, I'm like, oh, let's see Lucius Malfoy in a, you know, another series. Let's just get him.
I watched all of Stargate just because I learned that Robert Picardo was in some of the later episodes.
Is he like, really?
Yes, he is Richard Woolsey. He's a deer.
That's so funny. Okay, so let's get into some of the themes of Discovery. One thing that I liked is that both Jordan and Jen mentioned found family as something that was really important, that is very prevalent in Discovery. So let's just jump off starting with that, since that's something that both of you mentioned.
Oh, so for me, all of the Star Trek series seem to have some element of found family in them. In your trapped in space with this small group of people, relatively small compared to a civilization, you know, you're going to start to feel like family with them. Discovery seems to take that a step further, where they, like, several of the characters, like two of them are married, they've adopted kids. And at some point, the spaceship becomes, like, the computer system becomes sentient, and she, like, becomes part of the family. And when that happened, I realized, like, oh, this is what all the other shows have been doing metaphorically, where the ship is the family. But now the ship is literally, like, the aunt. She cares about them. She can talk to them. And I think that connects to a lot of the other themes of Discovery, where emotions are just as important as science when it comes to solving problems. And it, I think they embrace it more than the other shows do. Where the other shows, it's the background. This is kind of like, this is the focus. We are your family now. Help you through this.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Jordan, what about you? Because you mentioned that as well.
Yeah, I think the just the support in community that that isn't a family of origin is really close to my heart. So I was born and raised in Southern Illinois, moved to Minnesota for college, and then stayed in Minnesota. I've been here 12 years. And so I go back and visit my family. I'm close with my sister. But I feel like it's not the same thing as being on a starship light years away, but like you have to find kind of your people, and people that will care for you, that you care for. I'm really just moved by Michael and Saru's journey as kind of this like surrogate brother and sister to each other. Started off real rough, got rougher somehow. And then slowly got just closer where, yeah, like they, you know, Saru having left his sister, Michael having been estranged from Spock for so long. Yeah, they really became a brother and sister to each other. And they're kind of each other's like sibling ride or die now, which I love that. I hope that everyone can have that with someone, whether it's a biological sibling or not. And it just felt so, so real too, just like the conflict that they had and that they went through, which is something I love about Discovery in general, is like you get to see the things being earned. Not just promotions, but like relationships too, in a way that like some of the other shows, Voyager, it was there too. You got to see, especially with the Maquis and the Starfleet officers, like you got to see that a little bit. Deep Space Nine, you got to see that a little bit too. But in Discovery, you really get to see like these relationships be earned, which I love.
I love that. And just going off of what Jen was saying, all the shows do that to some extent. All of them, but I, through my watch through so far, really do love the found family aspect of it. Like, I already knew it was coming because of the forms being filled out, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna like pay attention to that. But, and we'll talk about queer representation as well, but as a queer person, found family is your family a lot of times. Like, Elizabeth is my sister for all intents and purposes, and there are people that I have kind of picked up along my way in life that are my family now, because I don't necessarily have a great relationship with my biological family. And seeing that reflected thus far in this show has been really, really wonderful, especially with the queer representation that is already there. Jen, do you want to speak to that at all?
I was actually just thinking, I think I was watching this show when they were in season 3, when they go into the future and leave everyone that they have ever behind. I think I was watching that around the same time, cutting off all the contact with my family, my biological family. And I just realized that as you were talking, as being queer, like, it does add to that, where it's like, sometimes you need to find a new family. Mm-hmm. It's not a family in addition to your biological family. It is in lieu of, because who you are and what you are is not conducive to staying with your biological family.
Mm-hmm. And
it is a little bit like being forced out into space and into the future and not knowing where you're going to end up, but you know that these people are going to be there with you. And I've kind of found that at my group home and with the staff here and the other residents. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Like the comparison to kind of getting like, when you said like getting thrust out into space just with these people, like, oh my God, that's a beautiful comparison. And yeah, wow. I don't know. Sorry. That just like hit me really, really hard. I'll turn it over to Jordan, but I just want to say like my experience thus far with Star Trek, has just been like, it just is the most inclusive of, fandoms, but also just like the shows themselves really kind of show a society where the ideal is that, like, I mean, obviously there's conflict in Star Trek, in the Star Trek universe, but it definitely kind of shows the society where people can be who they are and are valued for that. And I just love that, because I'm like, imagine if our society could get to that point as a whole. Anyway, sorry, Jordan, now you if you have any comments or about like queer representation.
Yeah, it's about damn time. Like, you know, like, because Star Trek in a lot of ways has been really progressive with representation. And then there's been areas that they've repeatedly fallen short, or like they've tried and it hasn't landed, or they tried and it didn't age well. You know, like there's kind of the whole spectrum there. So it's about time. And I love how vocal the cast and crew specifically are. I'm a cisgender straight woman in a straight passing relationship, and so a lot of it is just like, it's not something I experience personally, but I want to celebrate it. And one specifically, I just like love Michelle Paradise for like a whole host of reasons, but she's the one of the executive, or she's the showrunner in season 3 and 4. She was a writer in season 1 and 2. And just like having this strong, brilliant lesbian woman show running a Star Trek show, it just has me like, I feel like that's just like another layer to it where I just want to like sing her praises forever. It's not just in front of the camera. Yeah. In front of the camera. It's not just like in front of the camera. It's also behind the camera as well, which is really cool.
That is really cool. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Jen.
So Elizabeth, have you seen the Next Generation episodes past? Where
I don't think so.
So Riker was dating someone from a species without gender.
It's on our list.
But she identifies as a female. And it's a whole thing with that. But Jonathan Frakes was one of the people who was trying to get them to cast a male actor to play the female Sorin. And they would not do that. In Discovery, Jonathan Frakes directed the first episode where Adira Tall comes out as non-binary.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And like, I cried at that. Like, not just that they came out and they're using like they, them pronouns, like there's my pronouns on Star Trek, but knowing the history of it's Jonathan Frakes directing this and he was trying to do that back then. Like, it shows you how far society has come that we are able to do this now.
That's so wonderful. Oh my God, that's so exciting. That's awesome. Okay,
it's another layer of just the people that are involved with Star Trek, for the most part, want there to be that representation. And there are producers, who we will not talk about today, who wouldn't necessarily let that happen. And to, yeah, come around full circle and just make it happen is so wonderful to see. Sorry, Elizabeth, you were going to say something.
No, I was just going to say, no, I don't know. It's so wonderful. Like, I hear from Taylor a lot about, like, why she loves the show and, like, very, just, like, how, like, the intent for it to be inclusive. And, like, obviously we've talked about kind of some of the difficulties over time, but that it's kind of trending that way. But it's just wonderful to, like, it's wonderful to, like, meet other Trekkies and hear from you guys and your experiences and how, like, I don't know, it just constantly stands out to me how impactful this show is for people and how important it really is for people to be able to see themselves in the show, and that it is. It's meant to be like a lens to society. And yeah, I don't know. It's just wonderful. Like, you can tell it's so important to people for, like, different reasons, but the kind of, there's this, like, common thread of, like, I'm able to now see myself in the show, or, you know, this show kind of helped me relate to something that's going on in my life or something that's going on with, like, a friend or a family member, or yeah. And I just love that it really is, you can tell there's that strong bond between the show and its audience, you know? So.
Oh yeah. That's a perfect way to describe Trekkies and Star Trek. It is a symbiotic relationship happening, which is wonderful. Okay, let's keep going. I want to talk about Michael Burnham.
I don't know who
Michael Burnham is. You will know. Whoever wants to start talking about Michael Burnham, just start talking about Michael Elizabeth, Burnham. I love Michael Burnham.
Elizabeth, I am so excited for your future. I'm just going to say that. Like, you have so much, like, wealth of story ahead of you. I'm sorry, maybe okay. I should save that for the closing arguments. But no.
Honestly, pepper in the strong stuff. Yeah. Anytime.
No, okay, Michael Burnham. She is brilliant. I feel like I might need, like, some guidance on, like, what specifically we're discussing, but she's brilliant. She's capable. She's so compassionate, full of empathy. She's not perfect. She is, yeah, she's like my captain through and through, which I never thought. I know Taylor, you love Janeway. Janeway was my captain forever. And, like, I never thought I'd have a captain I love more than Janeway, but Michael Burnham is my captain now. It's close. It's very close. And I think they have a lot of similarities. There's a lot of similarities between Michael Burnham and Catherine Janeway. And so, I love her story, like, where she starts from, where she goes.
You can get into details for this, Elizabeth. You get into details.
I mean, okay. Just the fact that, like, watching the pilot, the Vulcan Hello, and, like, it opens, well, post Klingon stuff, it opens with, like, Captain Georgiou, Michelle Yeoh, love her too, but Captain Georgiou saying, like, Michael
Yeoh's in this.
Yes, Michelle Yeoh is in multiple seasons of Discovery. And so just add it to the list of reasons. They're just gonna keep going of why you should watch.
It's a long list already, honestly.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, Captain Georgiou telling Michael, like, I think you're ready for your first. I think you're ready for command. You've been my first officer for 7 years. I think you're ready for command. And then she, for a lot of reasons, mostly trauma related, mutinies against Captain Georgiou when the Klingons show up. And to go from that and then 6 months in prison as a mutineer to then, like, being brought back and working her way back up to being an officer, and then going to the future to save all sentient life with Discovery, and then kind of having to start over and realizing like the Federation in the 32nd century is not what the Federation was 900 years ago. And I don't know if I belong there anymore. Which is so, it so perfectly mirrors her like being raised on Vulcan and being like, do I belong with humans? Or, you know, like it perfectly mirrors that. So she like found, she's found her, she, in the show, she finds herself multiple times because she has so much to go, that she's gone through and so much to work through. And she just finally, it feels like in the middle of season three, I was on another podcast recently where we talked about Unification Part 3, the episode, and like, I feel like that's the turning point where she's like, all right, I'm in. Like, I'm actually in. Like, I know who I am. I know who the Federation is now. And I'm saying yes to both of these. Oh my gosh, I'm getting emotional. I'm saying yes to both of these things. And then it's just a journey to the captain's chair a few episodes later. And then in season four, you get to see what a badass captain she is. Like, she is such a good captain. Whew, okay. I'm going to let someone else talk because I'm getting all worked up.
That is okay. Feel your feelings. Wait, have I cried on the podcast? Probably.
Have we cried?
I've probably cried talking about Janeway or Beverly.
Oh, Parker. I know you. I know for sure. Maybe definitely off the podcast, you have cried talking about Star Trek.
Okay,
I know
okay. That. Okay, I'm... Elizabeth. Jen, what do you think about Michael Turner?
There are a lot of people who don't like the new Star Trek. And these people often use Michael Burnham as like the reasons why they don't like it. She's too emotional. She started the Klingon War. Like, and it is not her fault. She did not start any war that was not already going to start because the Klingons would not have been in our space. Like, they weren't ready to start the war. And in the universe of the show, Michael Burnham is set up as the scapegoat. But she was not, like, that was not fair to her. And I feel like a lot of people watching the show did not realize that part of the plot. They still are trying to scapegoat her for the things that they don't like. And I think it has a lot to do that she's a woman, she's Black. I think also the fact that she is a Fox sister, which like, they're like, oh no, they ruined Star Trek. Spock never had a sister. Well, just like Black people and women didn't ruin Star Trek, they were always there. We just weren't always able to tell the stories about it. There are reasons that we don't know about Michael during TOS. And if you actually pay attention, you realize that Michael is just awesome and y'all can shut up.
It's like people proving the exact point that is trying to be disproven with the show. There is not a captain in Star Trek history that is not emotional about every decision. Even Picard, who's arguably the most like logical or whatever you want to say, no, I'm sorry, they're all so like Ben Sisko, like Janeway, oh my god, like all of them, even Kirk, like they're all so emotional. And so to pin that on Michael Burnham is just ridiculous to me, because I feel like I can use every single thing other than like starting a Klingon war, which like you said, Jen, like part of it is that they're using her as a scapegoat, and clearly people just didn't get the point. If they're still, oh.
Wait, this is shocking to me again. So I don't know, maybe this is me not knowing very much, but like, again, my kind of like Taylor was saying, my the captains that I've been exposed to so far, the idea that, I mean, of course they're emotional. Like, of course they make emotional decisions. Like, all the very difficult situations frequently. So people don't like Michael Burnham because she's emotional? Like, really? Is this is like the,
Yeah, they say that. She cries all the time. Which there is a lot of crying in Discovery, but I'm like,
okay,
that seems like a normal human response to things. I shouldn't, like, there are humans that don't cry much, but like, that seems like a typical human response to the horrible things that they're experiencing. Like, I would say people in TNG don't cry enough, given what happens to them. Like,
right? Like, are you guys okay?
Right? Like, can we please discuss the trauma that just happened? No, we're going to go to the next episode and pretend that didn't happen.
Well, I think if the other shows had been more episodic, like Discovery, they would have gone into the character arcs more. Mm-hmm. And how it affects people. When you're just doing an episode a week and you've got several plots going on at once, you don't have time to show everyone processing the emotions. Like, the characters still with emotions, they just don't have time to show it because this is a different kind of show.
Yeah.
That's interesting too. That's a good point. Yeah. But yeah, I just, that seems so odd to me that you wouldn't, like, that people would have a problem with her because she displays emotion. Well, and I mean, the majority, I correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know, but it seems like the majority of the captains have been men in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine that plays a role in how people perceive captains and how they should be or shouldn't be.
Well, I think so. Kate Mulgrew, who played Janeway, I think has talked about, like, feeling like she had to walk this really thin line of, like, they wanted a female captain, but she had to fit in with all the male captains that had come before her, and she couldn't be too female, right? Like, she couldn't be too feminine. I mean, couldn't be too feminine. So
that is the most relatable sigh ever. Because there's nothing to say, because I'm trying to get my thoughts together. Because it's just, yeah, the double standard is ridiculous. And I'm sure Michael Burnham, being a Black woman on top of that, is just adding to, because the man I asked was a straight white man. But it's just the Star Trek. I talk about this a lot on the podcast. The Star Trek fandom as a whole has been wonderful to me and has been so extremely inclusive. And I've never felt unsafe at conventions or judged at conventions. But I feel that doesn't mean that there's not a pocket of people that won't like. Like, the fact that there's Discovery is progressive for even Star Trek fans, who I would argue as a whole tend to lean more progressive and inclusive and positive, there's always going to be a small margin of people, and it's just really frustrating that can be targeted at the amazing captain of Michael Burnham, who, like, I haven't even gotten the whole arc, but I know it's going to be amazing. And I know that I'm, like, so excited. And, like, I think you're right, Jordan. There was similarities with her and Janeway that I already noticed, that I was just like, oh, yes, like, another powerful woman. And how powerful is it for people of color to see people like Michael Burnham and Ben Sisko, for women or female-bodied people to see Janeway or Michael at the helm, when it's like, that should be the norm? Because for me, at least, I feel like I've lived a life that has been filled with powerful women. So it's like, why put that on the screen and don't be mean about it. I don't know. Just be nice. I don't know.
Ugh. Yeah. Kind of, I mean, that reminds me of, like, what, you know, Jen said earlier about, like, being able to see someone on the show that uses they, them pronouns. Like, that representation matters. Again, I am also, like, I'm in a straight passing relationship. We're bisexuals. We'll just put it as bisexual. But, you know, it's like, I'm still very much, like, I pass, like, I'm a white, straight passing woman, you know? And I still, like, for my friends and, like, I mean, for Taylor even, like, I see the impact that, like, seeing yourself in media has. Like, it has a huge impact. And it's so frustrating for me, like, when I hear, you know, some of my family members or other people kind of saying, like, oh, well, why did they change it for this? And why? I'm like, because it matters. Because people need to feel seen. People need to feel like they matter.
Yeah.
Outside of just, you know, like on a larger scale. And yeah. So I, again, it makes me happy and like my heart happy to see that.
Well, Star Trek has always been like at the front of that too, because like, I know I've heard that Nichelle Nichols originally wanted to quit Star Trek until Martin Luther King like wrote to her and said, do you know how important this is for us to see a Black woman at like on the bridge in the future? Like, Star Trek has always been doing this. Now it's just pissing off people who have access to the internet to tell us how much it pisses them off.
That's the thing. That's the thing. I wouldn't have heard it before. Now I have to hear it.
Yeah, this is a little off topic, but it's definitely related. But like, as a plus size woman, getting to see Tilly be a plus size woman on the bridge of Discovery is like, you don't get to see plus size people in Star Trek uniforms until Discovery and Prodigy. Prodigy did it, but Rock Talk's not a human, you know. But it's like seeing Rock Talk put on a uniform, I was like, yes, like that. We don't have the exact same body type because I'm human, but like this is amazing. So getting to see Tilly, yeah, even just like put, there's a couple more characters in like season four that are they're larger bodied people, and I'm like, I've wanted to see this for so long. So seeing myself on screen in that way is amazing.
Yeah, I'm discovering that with I forgot the actor's name, but he just passed away recently. But he was in a wheelchair and he played
Ken Mitchell.
And yes. And before that it was Pike's wheelchair, which was a plot point. The lady Melora in Deep Space Nine, where the whole episode was about her being disabled. Discovery, it's just, hey, there's a guy in the background in a wheelchair. Like, this is normal. We don't have to fix it.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's okay. One thing that I love.
It's just growing longer, guys. The list of reasons to watch.
Because it's small and big things, right? It's seeing somebody that's a disabled character. It's seeing somebody who has a larger body in a Starfleet uniform. Like for me, and you guys, I recognize that this is the most simple, stupid thing on the planet, but there's an episode where you can see Deanna Troi's arm hair.
That is not simple at all. That is like, that's huge.
Like, I remember seeing that just a couple years ago, and I was like, oh my god, like, what? But then it's also, like, seeing Jadzia Dax kiss a woman. It's seeing Ben Sisko at the helm. It's seeing these things. It's seeing Uhura in a do-rag in Strange New Worlds. It's all of these things that compound. And, like, the next bullet point was talking about the impact that Disco has on the Star Trek franchise as a whole, but I feel like we've kind of covered a lot of that already. But it's all these tiny things that add up to just being a person as opposed to just an idea.
And
that's something I love that Trek does.
And seeing that, like, I can exist in the future where before it was is that not possible, you know? Or is a large woman not welcome in a utopian future? So to see that, no, I am, and I have a place and I have a purpose and I'm necessary is so empowering.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Love hell that. Yeah. Okay. So
Because we're wrapping up here a little bit. So one thing, if you've listened to the Brides of Chaotica podcast, which if you haven't, you should, yay. We, at the start of every episode, we do what's called unhinged prediction time with Elizabeth's mind. So I thought it would be fun for our two guests to do quick little, like, couple minutes. I know it's asking a lot. I set a timer for Elizabeth normally. Predictions. What you think... It really does. One episode and I had to rein it in.
It was oof, that one was how many minutes did we clock in it before 15. You edited?
15.
No, it wasn't 15, was it really?
Elizabeth, I edit the episodes. It was 15.
That is true.
Anyway.
I'm not gonna apologize.
don't apologize, but I'm gonna set a timer for you. So let's just do a few minutes of Jordan and Jen. What are your predictions for season 5 of Discovery? Whoever wants to go first, you are welcome.
So I've been sort of famous on Twitter for accidentally predicting things correctly in my shows. Oh. So, like at the beginning of a season of Buffy, I said, this character is going to die because that deer is symbolic of this. And I was accidentally right. I thought I was making it up. So, So I've been thinking about this and I would like them to go back to the Mirror Universe in the future. I think they set up a lot of potentials for social change in the Kelpian species especially. And I think, especially for Saru, it would be good to go back to the Mirror Universe and see what has changed. One of my weirdest predictions I just think would be fun is that Grudge is not actually a cat. She is an alien species, and she is the queen of it because she's a queen. He keeps saying every time she says it, oh, that's a cat. She's the queen. I'm really hoping that Grudge finds her people and she is the queen of them. I was thinking that they might go back to the past somehow, like return to the timeline and live out secretly. But I don't want that to happen because I want it to be like, our decisions are permanent and these are the decisions we have made for our lives. And we are going to, we're sticking to them. So I don't think that if there is time travel, it will not be permanent. Mm-hmm. But it would be if Michael went back to check on Spock briefly somehow. I would like the Q and Paul to adopt another child because it seems like they keep doing that. So I'm just going to put that out there. And Owoshakun and Detmer, I think they need to get married. I think Saru needs to marry them because of a specific scene. I forgot what they were doing, but they were standing in front of Saru and it just looked like they were getting married. And I want it to be foreshadowing of him going from the times of the wooden ships or whatever in the future. So those are my predictions.
Yay. Oh, I love it. Okay, Jordan, what about you?
I love all of that. I'll start with Owo and Detmer because they were on my list as well. I need their romance to be canon. And I want it to be they've been in a relationship the whole time, but everyone knew except they never made it on screen. And so they're like, oh yeah, didn't you know they've been together for 12 years or whatever. That's what I want to happen. I want Saru and Tarina to get married and I want there to be some sort of asexual representation for them in a really healthy way. I think, how unhinged do we want to get here?
Elizabeth says some crazy stuff.
So. I, I say some things that probably, well, they could be drawn into a comic strip, but they probably shouldn't be.
Okay.
I agree with that.
I get very, but also I think it would be incredible. And if I hope at some point, someone who is artistically inclined would be willing to, because I would pay personally any amount of money to see my predictions drawn out and sketched. I think it would be incredible.
Okay.
So as unhinged as you would like to be.
Okay. So I think there could be some connections to TNG, like with this artifact that they're looking for. I think it could be connected to Picard and the Romulan supernova, because there's some, I think there's some Romulan shady stuff that could happen. I don't know what that connection could be, but I would love to see that, because I love Picard season one and I want that to be connected.
Me too.
I would love Robert Picardo to show up, because there's that, like, when he gets copied as himself, it's like, oh, you can always go back to Earth and it'll take you like X number of years to get back there. And you're like the shuttle that we're leaving for you, which conveniently would have him arrive around the 32nd century. So.
Yes.
So I want the EMH to show up. I'm trying to think of like what else could happen. I just want them all to be happy. Like, I want them all to be like happy and well. Like, I want Book and Burnham to like be happy and in love and like rest. I just, they need rest. I would love for, I hadn't thought about Hugh and Paul adopting another child, but I would love for them to. I just think of like when Giorgio is like, if you had children, I would find them and kill them or whatever. And then Hugh was like, if I had time, I'd actually have children. Like, I would love for them to adopt more children. I want them to go back into the mycelial network. We haven't seen that much. I want May, the Jacep person that Tilly connected with. They pinky promised that they would see each other again. I need them to see each other. I need May Ahern back in the show.
I love Tilly.
Yeah, yes. That friendship, they pinky promised they need to see each other again. I'll stop there. Okay. I'll stop there with the pinky promise, but I'm holding them to that pinky promise.
That's like a serious promise.
Mm-hmm. It really is. Honestly, from playground to adulthood, pinky promises, you don't cross them.
No.
They are as close to a legally binding contract, in my opinion, as you can get. And I know about legally binding contracts. Sort of.
All right. Speaking of law, bad segue. Oh. I will have now Jen and Jordan present their closing arguments as to why Elizabeth should watch Discovery.
Court is now in session.
I'm
kidding. I don't want to simulate law school in my off time. Go ahead, though. Yeah, I'm excited. Let's go.
I mean, I think we've given you a lot, like you said, a long list of reasons. And I will just summarize it to say everything that you've already seen, which I know isn't a ton yet, but everything you've already seen in Star Trek that you've mentioned that you love is in Discovery and turned up just a little bit. So how could you not want to watch that?
Very compelling points.
Short and sweet, I like it.
Yeah, I love it.
Jen, closing words.
Star Trek Discovery is boldly going where no Star Trek has gone before. I wrote that ahead of time and I was proud of it. They take the ideas of original Star Treks and take them literally to the future. We go to a time period that we have never seen in Star Trek before. And they hold up a mirror to society and hold up a mirror to that society in the mirror universe, of in ways that they couldn't do before now. As hateful as people still are, we are much more accepting of all of these other, like, non-standard humans, not just cisgender, heterosexual white men. And it's the ultimate in infinite diversity and infinite combinations. It is Star Trek. It's the most Star Trek out there.
I love it.
I love that.
I love it. Both very compelling arguments. I am easily swayed by both. I will watch Discovery.
And Jason, yes, Isaacs. I feel like we could have just said Jason Isaacs, and you'd be like,
I know. Michelle Jason Yeoh. Isaacs, Michelle Yeoh. Yeah. I'm just, you know.
I told you, stacked cast. I was not.
And I'm sure there are other actors I don't know about. So I'm just, you know, all of it.
Take Nassaro's in it.
Yeah. Wilson Cruz.
There's so many people, Elizabeth.
Doug Jones.
Excited.
I think we're honestly gonna do like a mini series of like by the season. Like a 5-episode. I think we will.
Well, I can't promise to wait to watch episodes. Honestly, I'm not gonna lie. I was kind of secretly Googling a couple different things about the show while we were recording because I got interested and I was like, oh, I wonder about this thing. And oh, where is this show?
Should be interested. That's what we're here for.
I am. I'm especially compelled by this specific series.
No, I think you're gonna like it a lot. I'm excited. I'm so excited. Thank y'all for coming on here to chat with us. I know it was a little chaotic, but we are called Brides of Chaotica. It's kind of our brand. Absolutely. So, yeah, truly, honestly, I did that on purpose. So anytime anything goes wrong, I can just blame it on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you guys. This will be a part of the Disco Last Days of Disco podcast festival. I'll email y'all when it's posted. And yeah, listen to Brides of Chaotica if you haven't already.
Yeah,
here, me and Elizabeth be even more unhinged.
More chaotic. This was
this was really tame.
Structured. Oh, very. Like, yeah, the podcast is truly, I think if it were like me and another me, I don't think it would get to a point where I could even put it into a cohesive thing to put out there. The only reason it's somewhat cohesive is because of Taylor.
Okay. I'm neurotic.
No, seriously, so. No. I'm just like a little bit like all over the place, but I kind of love that. I just need someone to organize for me. But thank you so much. It was wonderful to meet both of you. Like, really super loved it. It was great.
Yeah, and I'll keep y'all updated on the festival side of things. So y'all can watch yourselves if you want to, or I don't know if there will be an audio only moment, but I'll probably listen to that one. I'm an actor, but I don't like to watch myself. Yeah. Go figure. No actor does. But yeah, thank y'all.
Somehow I feel comfortable here.